This is the last day of this March 2016 seven-day session. We'll take up a koan today. This is from the Blue Cliff record. It's number 22, Seppo's Turtle-Nosed Snake. And it reads as follows. Seppo, speaking to an assembly, said, "There is a turtle-nosed snake in the South Mountain. You should take a good look at it." Choke said, "In the temple today, there are people who are losing their bodies and their lives." Later, a monk related this to Gencha, who said, "Only Brother Ryo can answer like that. As for me, I am different." "How are you different?" asked the monk. Gencha said, "Why only in the South Mountain?" Ummon took his staff and threw it down in front of Seppo, making a gesture of fright. So we have three protagonists here. We have Seppo, Choke, and Gencha. These are the Japanese names. These are Chinese masters, as almost all of the characters in these koan collections are. But the Chinese names are a little difficult to negotiate, so I'm going to go with the Japanese names. Seppo's actual Chinese name is Shui Feng, more or less. But we'll stick with Seppo here. Seppo is a master who appears in quite a number of koans, and so I'm going to forego reading any biographical information about him and for this commentary. Choke. His Chinese name is Chang Qing. Choke. His dates are 854 to 932. He was a disciple of Seppo. Both of these guys, Choke and Gencha, were Seppo's disciples. He entered a monastery at the age of 13, and then later trained under various Zen teachers. He said one of those teachers he studied under, he experienced difficulty and doubt about his practice. It's too easy to imagine that these all these masters were rock stars who just sailed through their practice and burst onto the scene. We don't hear about the years and years and years of grinding difficulty. We hear a little bit about the more dramatic crises, illnesses maybe, that some of them have. These are in the texts, but not the day-to-day routine and the discouragement and the frustration that is almost surely part of even the background of these masters. And this was one, Choke, experienced difficulty and doubt about his practice. Finally, he traveled to another place where only after arduous meditation under Seppo did he gain enlightenment. It says tradition holds that he wore out seven meditation cushions. Seppo provided Choke with, quote, the medicine a horse doctor uses to bring a dead horse alive again. He must have been going through quite a crisis of faith. He instructed Choke to practice meditation in the hall as if he were a dead tree stump. Choke followed this practice for 2.5 years until late one night, after others had gone to bed, he rolled up a bamboo screen and his eye fell upon the light of a lantern. At that moment, he came to awakening. You can be sure he wasn't expecting anything at that moment. He couldn't have been to have come to awakening. Nor could he have been looking ahead or looking back. The next day he composed the following verse to attest to his understanding. I was so far off, then all the earth was revealed when I rolled up a screen. If anyone asks me to explain our school, that is Zen, I'll raise the whisk and slap his mouth. Just to comment on that, it's in Zen considered the most foolish thing to try to explain the truth, and certainly to explain one's own understanding. I sometimes get this question at workshops about what is enlightenment, and I want to slap him in the mouth, but you have to adapt the teaching to the ability of the student to understand, and so usually I'll say it's seeing that all beings are equally endowed with this enlightened nature, which is true. So I'll raise the whisk and slap his mouth. And then it has in brackets, after Choke presented this verse to Seppo, Seppo presented it to Gensha, that's the third guy in this koan, and said, this disciple has penetrated the way. Now Gensho, remember he's still a disciple of Seppo, he disagrees. He says, I don't approve. This verse could have been composed with mundane conscious understanding. We have to test him further before we can confirm him. So apparently Gensho was a senior monk. He was senior to Choke, but both of them disciples of Seppo. That evening, when the monks assembled for a question and answer session, Seppo said to Choke, ascetic Bei, that's Gensha, doesn't approve your understanding. If you have been genuinely enlightened, please present your understanding now to the assembly. Choke then recited another verse. Amidst the myriad realms, the solitary body is revealed. Only persons self-allowing are intimate with it. Before, I wrongly searched among the paths, but today I see, and it's like ice in fire. So amidst the myriad realms, the solitary body is revealed. This body of reality. This, as the Buddha himself, according to legend, took the 7 steps and said, above the heavens and below the heavens, I alone, the world-honored one, this one body of reality, no other, no division. Seppo then looked at Gensha and said, I don't accept this. So now it's Seppo who's finding fault with the verse. It still could be composed with conscious understanding. This is something that I've always puzzled over a little bit that a monk of some experience at the monastery, even if he hadn't seen into his true nature, would have learned enough about the terminology and the doctrine to, it seems, to compose a verse that is could be convincing. It always seemed to me odd that a teacher would go, would assess whether a student had awakened through a verse, a written verse. But maybe that's just part of the story. Maybe the teacher knew the student in addition. His concern is understandable. It still could be composed with conscious understanding. He may have spent a week puzzling over this and rifling through books to come up with something that sounded persuasive. Choke then asked Seppo, "Please, Master, demonstrate what has been passed down by all the ancestors." So this now, this Choke, whose two verses were questioned by these two other guys, asked for Seppo's presentation. Seppo remained silent. Choke then bowed and walked out of the hall. Seppo smiled. When Choke went into Seppo's quarters for an interview, Seppo asked him, "What is it? What is it?" Choke said, "The weather is clear. It's a good day for," and this is an untranslated Chinese name, word, Pu Ching. Say it's a good day for chopping wood. Let's make it that. Gensha said, "Your answer is not apart from the great mystery." And this was a confirmation of Choke's enlightenment. And then when Choke became a master himself, he addressed the monks, saying, "If I truly expound the vehicle of our school, then I should simply close the door to the Dharma hall. Therefore, I'll just say that in the inexhaustible Dharma, there are no persons." This is an affirmation of the fundamental Buddhist teaching of no self. Or as it's written in calligraphy on a scroll in my quarters in Rochester, "From the very beginning there has never been a single thing." So that's Choke. Now let's go to Gensha, his senior at the monastery. His Chinese name is Xuansha, more or less. His dates, of course, about the same, 835 to 908. He, too, was a disciple of Seppo. As a young man, he lived as a fisherman on the Nantai River. There's a footnote to another koan featuring Gensha that said he was so completely illiterate that he couldn't read the figures on a Chinese coin. At the rather late age of 30, he left lay life to enter a temple on Lotus Mountain. Then he was ordained in the Vinaya tradition, the monastic rules and regulations. And he seemed to have a bent toward ascetic practices. I remember he's referred to in one of these stories we just read as the ascetic. He wore only a patched robe and straw sandals. He often fasted instead of taking the evening meal and was regarded as unusual by the other monks. He was called Ascetic Bay. Bay is part of his name, another name. His relationship with his teacher Seppo was like that of a younger brother. As his close disciple, Gensha worked with Seppo to build his teacher's practice center. His awakening was said to have occurred upon reading the words of the Sharangama Sutra. That's one of the most prominent of the Mahayana sutras, and one that most strongly advises vegetarian food diet. He left Seppo, moved to another mountain temple where he remained for the next 30 years. The governor of the province presented him with the purple robe and the title Great Teacher of the One Doctrine. Couple of little stories about him here. Once Gensha said, "All of you practitioners of Zen, you've traveled here from every quarter on foot, asking me to help you practice Zen and study the Tao. You've taken this place to be special, and when you get here, you ask every sort of question. Since this is what you've done, then you should check this place out thoroughly. Haven't I been completely forthcoming with you? I extinguish what you know. Then what is there left? If nothing is left, then of what use is your knowledge? Since you've come here, I now ask you, do any of you have the eye of wisdom or not? If so, then let us see it now. Can we see it? If not, then I call you all blind and deaf. Is that it? Are you willing to speak up in this manner? Virtuous Zen practitioners do not willingly submit. Are you authentic monks? The top of your head is exposed to all Buddhas in the 10 directions. You don't dare show the slightest error." The statement, "I extinguish what you know." This is the work of Zen. To go beyond what we know, what we think we know, the knowledge, the facts that we have accumulated, that have built up a kind of a filter over our way of seeing life, seeing reality. I extinguish what you know, then what is there left? So when we go beyond our what we think we know, then we are left in the world of direct, immediate experience. Another time, Gensha said to the monks, "All of you are seeing great peril. You see tigers, knives, and swords threatening your life, and you're experiencing unlimited terror." He's apparently not speaking literally. I mean, I say apparently because some of these monks in ancient China lived at times of civil war and bandits that would kill them. But we'll continue reading. "You see tigers, knives, and swords threatening your life, and you're experiencing unlimited terror. What's it like? It is like the world is painting itself with images from hell, making tigers, knives, and swords all right there in front of you, and you feel terrified." He could also be talking about Makyo. "But if you are now having such experiences, then it's a terror that arises from your own personal illusions and not something that someone else is creating for you. Do you want to understand these illusions and confused feelings? If so, then know that you have the diamond eye. If you know this, then you realize that all the things of the world don't truly exist. So where could tigers, wolves, knives, and swords threaten you? If Shakyamuni had dealt with this like you're doing, he'd never have made it." Yeah, Shakyamuni, who just before his awakening endured the assault of Mara, the objectification of his own remaining trace of karma, and held up when Mara badgered him with doubts. "This is why I say to you that the eye of a true practitioner envelops the entire world. It encompasses the whole universe. Not a single strand of hair leaks out. So where would there be a single thing left for you to see or to realize? This transcendence, this miraculous state, why don't you investigate it?" It's interesting. It's in our today's koan, it's not an entirely dissimilar teaching point. In this anecdote we just read, it's tigers, knives, and swords. In the koan, it's the turtle-nosed snake, which is a cobra. And we'll get there in just a minute. One last couple stories here. Gensha said, "It's as if all of you are sitting on the bottom of a great ocean, completely submerged, and you're still holding your hand out to people and begging for water. Do you understand? If you want to realize wisdom and bodhisattvahood, you can do so if you have great wisdom ability. With great wisdom ability, you can do it right now. But if your basic ability is somewhat lacking, then you have to be diligent and press on day and night, forgetting about food and sleep, enduring as if both your parents had died, being in just such anxiety. Give over your entire life, and with the help of other people, truly endeavoring for the truth, you'll certainly reach enlightenment." These references to wisdom ability. This is the realm of Manjusri, the bodhisattva of wisdom, and her delusion-cutting sword. The ability to cut through all of the obstructive phenomena of the mind, thoughts and other sticky problems in the mind, to cut through them, meaning really to see that there's nothing there, nothing with any roots to them. They're just mental formations that have clustered and for a shorter or longer period in the mind and have no abiding reality to them. Seeing that is wisdom ability, and returning one's attention to the practice is utilizing that wisdom ability, that sword. A monk asked, "What is it? And why is it so hard to realize?" Genshe said, "Because it's too close." It's like being entirely submerged at the bottom of the ocean. It's said that a fish doesn't know it's in water. And most of us don't know that we are completely saturated with this essential nature. A monk said, "I've just arrived here and I beg the master to point out a gate whereby I may enter." Genshe said, "Do you hear the sound of the water in Yan Creek?" The monk said, "I hear it." Genshe said, "That's the place of your entry." Sounds are such a gift. We come to appreciate this sesshin more than any other time, where we just can wake up to this marvelous world of sound that all too often we are cut off from. And above all, the natural sounds, birds and running water, insects, trees, the leaves rustling. We come to see, even if we don't grasp it completely, we come to sense that these sounds are our own voice, our own nature. Now back to the koan, Sapo's turtlenose snake. Sapo, speaking to an assembly, said, "There is a turtlenose snake in the South Mountain." A turtlenose snake is apparently a direct translation for what we would call a cobra. Another translation has it this way: "There is a turtlenose snake in this South Mountain." He should take a good look at it. Of course, he's not literally talking about a cobra. You know what he's talking about. You should take a good look at it. And then later, Choke, one of these two disciples, says, In the temple today, there are people who are losing their bodies and their lives. This, of course, is related to the cobra. Another translation is, in the Zendo today, there are people who are losing their bodies and their lives. What's his point? Seppo says, in the South Mountain. Choke says, right here, in the temple, there are people losing their bodies and their lives. Later, a monk related this to Genshe, who said, only brother Ryo, that's just, he's referring to Choke, that's just his familiar way of referring to him. Let's say Choke. Only brother Choke can answer like that. As for me, I am different. So he's inviting the monk to ask, how are you different? Asked the monk. Genche said, why only in the South Mountain? Good point. Then why did Seppo say, refer to this South Mountain or the South Mountain? And then Umon got the last word. He took his staff and threw it down in front of Seppo, making a gesture of fright. Fright. Does a Zen master like Umon experience fright? Why not? Certainly we can be sure that if he were startled without any warning at all, someone came unexpectedly, like maybe out of his sight in the middle of the night and roared or fired a gun, of course he'd be startled. Enlightenment doesn't rule out, doesn't override our basic wiring, our startle impulse. It's just very different from the fear of that comes from our dwelling in our thoughts, fear of what grade we're going to get on that paper or that exam, the fear of what the biopsy will show. Even then, with things in the future, fear is not unnatural to us. Of course, if we're facing potential death or serious illness or injury, it's not so strange that we would have some fear. It's the question then is whether we hold on to it, that sure, a thought may come up about the diagnosis we have yet to receive, but it's Zen training enables us to refrain from dwelling in those thoughts. It comes up now and then you're paying attention to what's in front of you. What's right here? At all times, we have this choice of where we direct our attention, whether we direct it into the future, even thoughts about after Sesshin, or into the past, looking back on things that happened during Sesshin, or keeping it right here, which is the only thing that's real, this moment. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.